Welcome everyone to the HP Global Employee Ownership Podcast Series. Today we have with us John Serkin, President of Hyper Networks, and as always we have CEO of HP Global, Bob Whalen, and Senior Vice President of People and Culture, Stacy Baum. Today John is going to be taking us through his journey from the military into some work in technology with private equity, and how that ultimately led him to become President of Hyper Networks, and how he and his company became part of the HP Global family of brands. Just a few housekeeping items before we get started. We recognize that this podcast is available to the general public, but we just want to say that the views expressed in it are in the context of HP Global and may not apply to broader audiences. With that, Stacy, take it away.
Thanks, Jamie. Hi, John.
Hello.
We're very excited to have you here with us today, and anxious just to hear a little bit about your journey of where you started in business and how you got here to HP Global. So can you walk us through a little bit of your early years?
Sure. Yeah. So I started my career in the military. I got out of high school and went straight into the Army. I ended up being in the military for 9 years total. But I was in a couple different jobs there. Really, I grew up in a small town. Wanted to find a way out of that small town, and the military was like the fastest way for me to do that. So I joined the Army, went into the infantry. I spent 4 years there, and then realized that wasn't the job for me. Ended up reclassing and going into a job called psychological operations, which is a really fun job. And so I got to do that for 4 years, but it was really, akin to a marketing job. There was a lot of IT elements to it, and there was a lot of making, I would call it propaganda, but, you know, coming up with products that we could use to help try to influence people. So there was a good psychology aspect to it as well. I was a Korean linguist at that time. So I was assigned to the Pacific Command, which, you know, my area was mostly in Korea. So I got to do a lot of travel related to that. And it was really like a fun experience for me. I got to a point in my military career, though, where it was time for me to either go be a drill sergeant or a recruiter, just because they have a very defined path for what everybody has to do. And I wasn't really excited about doing either one of those things. So I decided to get out after 9 years, and I kind of ended up taking a job on a whim at an IT company that was in Michigan, and I had lived in North Carolina at the time. So it was just like a random across the country thing that I thought would wind up being a temporary job for me. But it was with a company that did IT consulting for small businesses. So they did a lot of like phone systems, servers. This was pre-cloud applications, right? So it was a lot of like physical servers stacked up in buildings. And did that for about a year and a half, but that company wound up getting acquired by a telecom company that was pretty large. So the telecom was around, 1,300 employees at the time, and had probably 30 or so offices across the U.S. And the goal with that acquisition was really to turn the IT work that we were doing into a revenue-producing business unit. And the thought was that while this company was spending a lot of time doing commercial installs at, you know, businesses, hospitals, doctor's offices, that kind of thing, that they could upsell those guys on IT services. And so we did that for a few years. And then as that company got to growing, we wound up in a spot where that company was acquired by private equity. And so that sort of changed the leadership structure of the company quite a bit. The owners of the company had a little bit of a feud and a falling out, and that led to the private equity sale. The private equity guys came in, and really the goal was to make that company that I worked for a platform and do a bunch of bolt-on acquisitions to it. So in my role at the time that private equity got involved, I believe I was the CTO of the company. And as a result of just being in that position, I wound up in a spot where I was spending a ton of my time dealing with acquisitions. And some of these were acquisitions that the private equity folks had essentially just thrown over the wall at us. Like, we didn't do due diligence on them. We didn't talk to these companies ahead of time. We were just told, hey, here's this acquisition, go figure out how to integrate them. Now, we later changed that. That recipe didn't work well, obviously. But just with that position, I wound up in a spot where I had spent a lot of time inside these companies that we were acquiring, because the IT element of it was so central to kind of what we did. it sort of just naturally moved me into operations. And I wound up in a spot with the private equity team there where I served both as the COO and the CEO of that company prior to essentially breaking it up and selling it. I mean, it went through what wound up being a 7-year investment cycle. We broke that company up and sold it. And sort of on the tail end of breaking that company up, there was a brand new project we had just started in the Carolinas for a fiber provider that was, I'll say, in its infancy. It was $2-3 million worth of work. And so I cut a deal with the private equity folks to essentially allow me to take over that business, to deal with, you know, buying some assets, moving some contracts with the customer. Left the private equity and started with what is now Hyper Networks. So Hyper Networks was formed really, I'll say, from a subcontractor that worked for us at that company and me joining. And we started that company, 5-6 years ago, and started with 5 employees, grew very, very rapidly. I mean, I'll say in the first 3 years, we grew from a handful of employees to a spot where we had 120 employees. And we did it so fast and so wrong that we were kind of in a spot where things were really in shambles, right? I mean, we didn't have a lot of the back office processes set up that we needed. The owner, my partner that I was dealing with, you know, wasn't in a spot where he was capable of managing or dealing with a business that large. And we were kind of in trouble. Like we didn't have enough working capital to grow, but we were in growth mode. And our business is one where working capital is a requirement just to operate. And, you know, it's extremely, like, it's imperative that we have working capital when we're in growth mode because of the time it takes us to get paid for the work that we do. So I started realizing that we needed to find a solution that essentially got my partner out of the business. And I had approached some of the folks that I had worked with before, both from a private equity standpoint and, you know, just some investment, some banking, some industry folks that had done acquisitions and roll-ups. But I was essentially looking for someone to buy my partner out of the business at the time. I ended up meeting the folks at HB through a mutual acquaintance in one of those companies that's in the telecom business. Ended up meeting Bob, and that's how we kind of wound up in a spot where we ended up doing this acquisition.
Yeah, so, you know, that story's a little, you know, is interesting from our standpoint because Hyper Networks is actually very different from how we've handled that from our other transactions. I got a call, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago from my brother Jeff that said, hey, you know, if I could find an acquisition, you know, would you be interested in investing in it or what? I said, sure, I'd be happy to. And so, you know, fast forward a year or so, you know, I have this, you know, potential for us. And so we started looking at it, you know, really from an HB Global standpoint, but there were a couple things that made it not a good acquisition for HB Global. First of all, as John talked about, kind of the infrastructure behind the company, you know, at the time, just they did not have good financial data. Really, the buyer was going to take a relatively large risk because you really didn't even know financially what you were getting. And so we ended up, you know, doing the transaction, you know, outside of HB Global, you know, where I just did it personally. And the other aspect, you know, was the turnaround nature, you know, to it with John's partner. So for those reasons, we did it outside with always the intention, you know, if it worked out, you know, that we would like to bring it into HB Global. And we really saw ourselves as being a holding company that would diversify away from mechanical contracting and other businesses. And just lo and behold, you know, it all worked out. You know, over the couple of year period, we got good financials together. We got in a much better position from a working capital position, you know, over the 2 years. You know, and we're able to bring it into HB Global. And we're really excited, you know, now to have Hyper Networks part of our business. And it's one that's not exactly the same as mechanical contracting, but has a lot of the aspects, you know, that allows, you know, us to deploy the experience that we've learned in our business, you know, to Hyper Networks. And I think, you know, we're continuing over time through John's leadership of, you know, professionalizing the business and really bringing, you know, a lot of the best practices of operating a business to, you know, to Hyper Networks.
I really enjoyed listening to your story, John. I think that it's a really good path and a lot of accomplishments in just the first part of your career. So that was really interesting. And Bob, I think the difference of how Hyper came into the HB family of companies is also great and aligns really well with your passion around getting as many employees to be employee owned as possible. So there was a good strategy to figure out a way to transition to an
ESOP. We're really excited about it. And it also offered us, you know, an opportunity to go back to our roots to be really entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. You know, we're much more professionalized now than when we were 15 years ago. By the way, we're taping this on October 1st. We've just completed our 15th year of being an ESOP, and we're really excited, and it's Employee Ownership Month, you know, so it ties into that. But it gave us an opportunity, you know, to do that. And, you know, I'd like to say we knew exactly how this was going to play out, but we really didn't. You know, it's, you know, made sense in the long run that we'd be 2 years in and be in the place that we are now. But just a really fun, you know, thing, you know, for us to get involved in and create more employee owners, which is really what our passion, you know, is about, our mission, you know, as a company to do that. And we're really excited about what it's doing for us at Hyper Networks.
And John, your history touches on a lot of different experiences from, you know, military culture to private equity. What would you say the differences are? What did you learn of similarities or differences between military culture, private equity culture, and now being part of HB's culture?
Yeah, so it's funny. I mean, I think when I was in the military, I felt like by the time I got out of the military and worked for a company that actually had to make money and, you know, had a mission centered around being profitable, that they would have everything figured out, right? I think in the military, you have a very defined path for kind of what's next and what everybody's job is. But you also wind up, at least in my experience in the jobs that I had, being kind of stifled by having an inability to actually change things. So being stuck in some archaic processes or seeing a better way to do things, but not being able to actually speak up or make a change because there was all of these legacy processes and systems and training that existed. It was just too big of a ship to actually make much of a difference. And so the surprise for me when I got out was realizing that, one, private companies don't have it all figured out and everybody's kind of figuring it out, right? But two, like that the ability to actually provide feedback on how to do things better. And, you know, Bob talks a lot about getting a little bit better every day. But that ability in private industry in the right company is extremely powerful. And to the degree that you can surround yourselves with people that share that kind of mindset, it's a really fun job to have. I mean, I'll say that's actually why I think I've bounced around a lot in different areas early in my careers, because that's kind of just, I'm a problem solver. I like the IT element of being able to see a problem and thinking methodically about how to solve it, how to do it better. I kind of feel the same way about my job now. And as we approach kind of looking at our growth and some of the initiatives that we're involved in, it's really exciting to me to be able to have that mindset and to be able to foster that mindset on our leadership team as well and see some of the ideas that they come up with and giving that authority and that power to our people.
John, since the acquisition, I know Hyper is a newer company of HB Global. What are some of the surprises you've experienced as part of the acquisition?
Well, so it's funny, I guess, because all of my prior acquisition experience was with a private equity, which, you know, I realize they're all different. The one that I worked with had a very, I'll say a very well-defined playbook of how they dealt with acquisitions. And it often felt like putting a little bit of a square peg in a round hole. There were some that that process worked well with, but others that it really didn't. And so when we looked at this acquisition with HB, I really appreciated the messaging that we had prior to doing the acquisition. I spent a lot of time with Bob and with the team just talking about the HB culture and what it was like to work here. But I always had this feeling in the back of my mind, like, is this just a sales pitch, right? Because it was kind of the I don't want to say the same. It was a similar message to what we were giving people from the private equity side. But the contrast there, the difference was when I was dealing with that with the private equity guys, it was just a message and it was just a sales pitch. And here, like, we really have, Bob has delivered on everything that he said we would do. So I think for us, you know, key differences post-acquisition, we obviously were going into the acquisition with a couple of problems. I mean, I'll say working capital was a big one. Bob alluded to the issue with just how finances were tracked and done. And we actually needed some help there. I mean, there were some areas that we really did, like, need some outside help. I'll say safety, some of the financial work in progress tracking, safety and working capital were probably the big areas. So post-acquisition, we actually asked for some help in those areas and we were able to get it. We didn't go into this this acquisition with HB with like a list of things that needed to be done. There really were, I'll say, almost no absolutes, right? I mean, I think Bob made a comment about, like, we're not going to do anything that's going to put anybody in jail and we're going to use EOS.
Yep.
Those were the two precursors. So I think at the end of the day, we've had a lot of the autonomy that, you know, I spoke about that really, I think, helped our team kind of get where we are today, because we've got a lot of folks that have great ideas and that know how to do this, right? And we have some areas where there's holes. So I think for us, it was about identifying where those holes were, soliciting help on filling those holes, and then letting the team do what it does best and doing the things that it's good at.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that John mentioned there, we don't have a lot of have-to-dos, you know, when we acquire companies, but one of them is that you're going to implement the EOS operating system, you know, and I think that, you know, the elevator pitch of what that is, it's an operating system of how you operate your company that basically starts with having a very clearly defined mission, vision, core values, you know, what your company's about, establishing a long-term strategic direction, and then building out a plan to achieve that strategic, you know, objective that really breaks it down in time frames. You know, so you have a 3-year plan, and then you have what you want to accomplish in the next year around that, and then you have quarterly rocks that you do, and then there's what's called a level 10 meeting that meets, you know, once a week where you have issues and you're checking them off, with really the point being that when you take on an issue, you're solving it permanently. And there's other aspects to EOS that are really important, involving, you know, issues like getting the right people on the bus, you know, and you know, everything around that. But it's one of the few things that we say, you know, to all the companies we acquire, you're going to use this. Now, not everybody, you know, we call it EOS Pure, you know. Right. And so there's facilitators of the EOS system, and they will, you know, consult you on doing it in what's an EOS, you know, pure way. And for the large part, you know, we follow that. But we're not as concerned about that is from a big picture standpoint. This is the system, you know, that we operate so that we can track, you know, and John, you know, talks about the scorecards that they have now, the things that they can track their business on, whether they're making progress, you know, as we talked about, just getting a little bit better each day. And that's really our objective.
I think with that too, though, you know, if I could just add on the EOS side for us, I'll say when we were first told about EOS and like really actually looked at it in my mind, I was like, oh, this is going to be another one of those, you know, corporate rah-rah go team things, right? I'd been involved in some of the like Franklin Covey stuff before at other companies and like four disciplines of execution. And a lot of these programs are pretty similar. I read the book I had my leadership team read the book, and then we sat down afterwards as a team and kind of talked about it. And for us, you know, it sort of blends what I was talking about with the autonomy and the absolute requirement that we use EOS, because while there was a directive that we needed to use EOS, there wasn't one on how we did it. And there wasn't one on exactly like what that meant. How far in the organization did we deploy it? Did using it mean reading the book and having a meeting once a week? Or did it mean like going all in with the whole company? That was really left up to us. So after the leadership team met and read the book, we ended up meeting with some implementers just to sort of interview them and see whether or not we thought it would be a good fit for us. And I got to say, for us, it really fit just being the perfect thing at the perfect time, because pre-acquisition, we were living so hand to mouth. The job was always putting out fires, right? We never really sat down and talked about strategy, aside from how are we going to make payroll next week. That was like as strategic as the conversations got. So the process did really force us to sit down and look at like, where do we want to be in 10 years? What do we want to be when we grow up? And realizing that that's a really big pie in the sky kind of, you know, dream, but then saying, okay, well, what do we need to do in 3 years to get there? And if that's the 3 year plan, what do we need to do this year and this quarter and this week? And so being able to distill that down into small things and then push that down to the organization. Everybody at Hyper Networks today has a quarterly state of the company meeting that the leadership team leads, where we talk about what the goals and initiatives are. And they're not all just financial ones. It's not all just about gross profit and net profit. To say what we want to accomplish this quarter. We talk about what we accomplished last quarter versus what we said we would. So there's accountability there. And then that's pushed down. Everybody in the company knows what the core values are. They know what the mission of the company is. They know what the 1 year plan, the 3 year picture, we're transparent about it. And that was a stark contrast to before the acquisition, where, you know, folks hoped they were getting paid next week. And that was their communication from the leadership team, is that they got paid.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the misperceptions about HP Global is because we spend so much time talking publicly about being employee focused, and it's really around being a great place to work. You know, I think the other side of that is we are incredibly, you know, disciplined that we're here to accomplish something, and that's to create value. And while, we balance that with being a great place to work, we need to produce profits to be able to create that value for our employee owners. And EOS is one of the things that helps us to balance, you know, all of the things that we're trying to accomplish, you know, here at HP Global. And, it's just like John said, it's not just a corporate rah-rah thing. You know, it's really concrete. These are the things we're going to do, that we're going to hold ourselves accountable to accomplishing these tasks. And, you know, just as, kind of we did this 10 years ago at HP Global, and we set at the time like this audacious goal for 10 years that seemed like there was no way we would ever get there, that we wanted to be a $1 billion revenue company. Well, we're 7 years into that plan now, and we are exactly, you know, on the revenue line that we expected to be there. You know, and I would say the most important thing isn't even, you know, that we, you know, end up being a $1 billion company, because that's certainly not the most important thing to us. But it just goes to show that when you're disciplined about establishing a plan, the tasks that it's going to take to, and you go about doing it, you know, you're going to, you know, end up somewhere in the vicinity of what you set up. And
even if
that's
it's a stretch goal.
And what we thought was a stretch goal, and, you know, a goal that we thought people, you know, may not respond to because it seems like it's so audacious. And the reality is, if we wanted to meet that goal, we absolutely have the resources where we were just doing. Now, there's a lot more that goes into it, you know, for us than that,
right?
But we could. And I think that just speaks, to the system itself and how you go about it and really getting disciplined about operating. And I think that makes HP Global a great place to work. You know, we're going to accomplish things here.
Right.
And that's part of what we're trying to do.
John, I know we talked about Hyper Networks being newer to the HB Global family of companies. How have you seen your employees receive employee ownership so far?
Yeah, so I mean, because of the timing Bob had mentioned, we're approaching, I'll say just crossed the end of our first year under employee ownership. So we've been with Bob and team for 3 years, but just closing out the first year as an ESOP. I'll say, you know, probably one of the most notable moments in my career has been when we got to actually stand up in front of everybody at the end of the year and talk about like what was happening with the company. This past year, we paid bonuses to people, and we have for every year that we've been inside the HB umbrella. Never had before that. So I think like that was a super positive message for everybody, because in our industry, bonuses are always talked about and rarely paid. And so for us, we paid bonuses and to everyone. I mean, everybody that had been with the company like 90 days or something like that. And we got to also talk about the transition and becoming an employee owned company, because the first 2 years we weren't under that. That was one of our 10-year goals, was to be an employee owned company. So very positively received by the employees as we're getting to the end of the first year now. You know, folks will start seeing that be meaningful as statements are issued next March, I think. And we've seen a lot of enthusiasm from definitely folks, you know, and I'll say leadership positions that understand it a little bit better. On the line, I think it'll be more meaningful for them as they start seeing what it means for them in terms of account balances, right? Because it is difficult to explain and get people to sort of understand what employee ownership actually is to them.
I think this is it's not a magic, you know, bullet, you know, to around employee ownership. And our experience is that it's taken, you know, most people, I would say, till they get around a $50,000 account balance is when we really start to see widespread buy-in to the employee ownership. And I think that's for a lot of reasons. First of all, the ESOP is a very long-term thing, you know, so it doesn't, you know, pay out today. It's something for the future, for your retirement. So that works against it a little bit. But as the balances grow, it becomes really meaningful, you know, and I think it becomes a bigger thing. But we definitely also see those early adopters that buy in, you know, initially, and they are the best spokespeople, you know, for the company. They are all in from day one and love it. And they really help to bring everybody along to see the real value. And now we're starting to have a track record. Now that we've been here, you know, for 15 years, people, you know, and we can show this is what we've done. It was a lot harder, you know, back when, you know, I stood in front of the IT Landis employees in 2014, and we had only been an ESOP for 4 years, you know, and the amount of value that was created at that point was relatively minimal, you know, to really show the value of this thing. It's a lot different, you know, today than it was, you know, back in 2014.
Yeah, we have had a handful of like employees who really have doubled down on it, to a point where, you know, it's messaging like, you know, seeing someone's tires be bald on their work truck saying, you wouldn't let your kids drive that car home. Like, this is your truck, this is your company, you know, that kind of messaging, right? Which is really exciting to see the enthusiasm in some of the folks for sure.
John, what have you seen improve for your employees since the acquisition? I know you touched on bonuses. What else have you seen improve for them?
Yeah, I think post-acquisition for us, so moving into employee ownership, obviously, you know, we touched on that. We made some pretty significant changes to, I'll say, all of our benefits, but like, you know, with health and some of the other related benefits, partially because like we had better data that we could make those decisions with around what programs to have access to. But also there was instances where we were able to, you know, look at policies that maybe HB had where we were able to share something like more on the commercial side, but that benefited us either with lower costs, which we were able to then pass on being lower cost to employees. Bonuses, as I mentioned, were huge and were probably the one that like employees felt the most. I'll say just because of the timing of the acquisition, we were able to deal with, you know, bonus payments relatively quickly, even pre-being employee-owned. The company had a few decent years post-acquisition, and I think sharing in what we were able to create those first years with the employees like really meant a lot to them, because like I said, it's always talked about in our industry, and if bonuses are paid, they're generally really haphazardly paid, where an owner decides, you know, person A is going to get this envelope of cash and person B is going to get this. And I think in conversations with Bob, it's very much been that if anybody's going to get a bonus, everybody's going to get a bonus. Might not all be tied to same percentages and things like that, but that was left up to us to decide. So, you know, I'll say the big ones were health coverage, bonuses, the ESOP side for employees. And the 401k was issued as a grant to employees. And so we had a lot of folks that like had given feedback in surveys saying that, you know, they wanted to see matching on 401ks. Being able to offer it as a grant, we essentially sign everybody up for it, whether they want to or not. I mean, they would have to deliberately exclude being given the grant if they didn't want it. But I think the employees are seeing that we're sort of putting our, you know, money where our mouth is. It relates to being a good place to work because of those programs.
And it's certainly, you know, part of HB Global's culture to say we want our employees to succeed in retirement, so they don't have to put any of their own money up front for 401k or ESOP, which I think is a benefit.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the message that Bob delivered when we did our initial post-acquisition discussion with all the employees that I think was really well received is sort of the message around, like, if you work here your whole career, it's our job to make sure that you have the ability to retire and, you know, to be able to give you a method to do that. And so I'm really hopeful that at least with our employees that are younger and that are just starting out, that they realize that, you know, maybe outside of the military or a job where you have some kind of federal service, which even that's on shaky ground these days in terms of being able to rely on for retirement, like, this is pretty rare and it's unique. And so I think given what I've experienced in my career, I'm really hopeful that our guys latch onto that and realize what a benefit that is.
Yeah. Something that I'm really excited about over and above, you know, the more than $200 million we've created within our ESOP plan for our employees in retirement, the combination of our employees' contributions and the matches and grants that the companies have done, you know, over time, we now have more than $100 million in our 401k plan as well. You know, so, you know, this, you know, company combined now has over $300 million of retirement resources, which our employees are well on their way to having what they need in retirement. And, you know, I think an important part of what our employees, you know, should do is to contribute to the 401k themselves. You know, the ESOP plan is not guaranteed. It's based on our company thriving. And, you know, while we're committed and we're going to make decisions that will lead to that providing a retirement for our employees, they shouldn't 100% trust that we're going to get there. And the best way to do that is to contribute to the 401k. You know, we're doing the 3% grant. And I think all of those things together, we're being very prudent about getting our employees to where they need to be in retirement.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us. It was a great discussion today. Thank you, Bob.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Stacey.
Thanks, guys. If you have questions for Bob, we'd love to hear them and answer them in future podcasts. Feel free to submit them to eopodcast@hb-global.com, and we'll see you next time.